Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. I'm Rachel Isaacs, a student from Manalapan, New Jersey, and the engineer for this program. We look forward to learning some Torah with you today. Thank you for tuning in. Today we are joined by Rabbi Meir Schweiger, a faculty member and the Mashkiach Ruchani, or spiritual guide at Pardes. He will be teaching us today about transforming Purim into a meaningful Jewish experience. A few quick announcements, and then we'll hand it over to Rabbi Schweiger. Do you have a vision for the Jewish future? Have you considered a career in Jewish education? The Pardes Educators Program includes 2 years of subsidized study and living in Jerusalem, leading to an MA degree in Jewish education. Graduates teach Judaic studies in day schools across North America. For more information, see the Pardes website at www.pardes.org.il. Your participation and feedback is vital for the success of the podcast series. Please send us comments on the episode, where you live, and how you heard about us. Send your email to podcast@pardesusa.org. Thank you. That's it, and now Rabbi Schweiger.
Thank you, Rachel. The session that we're doing today is in lieu of the Parshat Shavua session for Parshat Ki Tisa. With God's help, we will have future sessions, and at that point, we will talk about the golden calf. But today, I would like to speak about Purim, and specifically, I would like to focus on chapter 9 of Megillat Esther, which describes what I would call the historical development of the celebration of Purim, and perhaps we will also look into the ramifications for today. We're told in chapter 9, verse 17. Biyom shlosha asar lechodesh Adar, v'noach ba'arba'asar bo, va'aso oto yom mishte v'simcha. That on the 13th day of Adar, the Jews fought their enemies. And in fact, in the previous sentence, we're told of how they killed 75,000 of their enemies. But then the initial celebration was done the day after. On the 14th day of Adar, they rested, where resting is a reference to resting from warfare. Va'aso oto yom mishte v'simcha, and they made it into a day of drinking and rejoicing. And in the next verse, 18, and the Jews in Shushan gathered on the 13th day and also on the 14th day and rested on the 15th day and made it a day of drinking and rejoicing. The first thing that we note is that there was not this universal celebration of Purim that was done on the same day. For most of the Jews, the initial celebration was done on the 14th day of Adar. The Jews of Shushan, who needed an extra day to fight, only celebrated on the 15th of Adar. So already there is a split in the Jewish people as to when you celebrate. On the other hand, it's interesting that all the Jews celebrated in the same manner, drinking and rejoicing. It's very interesting to note that when we read about this idea of Mishte v'simcha, it perhaps takes you back to the beginning of Megillat Esther in chapter 1, where there's an elaborate description of how Achashverosh and his court celebrate, where the celebration revolves around drinking, to the point where one could even say that drinking is a religion in this society. So that one could say that when in fact the Jews are celebrating initially, they are celebrating in true Persian fashion, where drinking is at the core of their celebration. We go on to verse 19. Al-Kain Hayudim HaPrazim, and therefore the Jews who live in the unwalled cities, Osim et Yom Arba'asar L'Chodesh Adar, make the 14th day of the month of Adar, Simcha U'Mishte, rejoicing and drinking, V'Yom Tov, and a festive day, U'Mishloach Manot Ish L'Re'ehu, and the sending of portions, a man to his friend. Verse 19 describes the beginning of the institutionalizing of Purim. It's no longer what happened that initial moment when the Jews were victorious over their enemies, but what is now becoming a standardized practice. And it's interesting that it's the Jews who are in the unwalled cities, and we could say that this is perhaps what we would call a grassroots movement, who take upon themselves to commemorate Purim, and they do it with their niche, with their particular way of celebration. First thing is, they don't have mishte v'simcha, but simcha u'mishte, that the rejoicing somehow precedes the drinking, rather than vice versa. But in addition, there are two other elements. The first, Yom Tov. And it's interesting that in the Talmud, in Masechet Megillah, on Daf Vav, page 6, the rabbis understood this, Yom Tov, to be a reference to prohibition of work. And in fact, it seems to be that the Jews, when they wanted to institutionalize Purim, were looking for some sort of model to base it on. And the model are the festivals, as we know them. Pesach, Sukkot, Shavuot. And what characterizes a festival, what makes it into a Yom Tov, is the prohibition of work. So that the Jews wanted to make, Jews in the unwalled cities, Purim, a festival, in keeping with the other festivals, the three pilgrimage festivals. And there was one other element as well, Mishloach Manot Ish L'Re'ehu, where each one sent their friend portions, which mean in the context, portions of food. So that, it's interesting, if I initially said the celebration of Purim was done in true Persian style, when Purim begins to become institutionalized, there is an attempt to give it a Jewish spin, a Jewish dimension. To first of all have the simcha, the rejoicing preceding the drinking, where the drinking is just an enhancement of the rejoicing, to have it be a day which is a holy day, a day which perhaps expresses a relationship to God by not doing work, which is the idea of Yom Tov, but to also give it a social dimension, a day that brings people closer together by giving portions of food, by having that sense of camaraderie through food. The next phase is verse 20. And Mordechai writes these things down, and he sends out books to all the Jews in all the kingdoms, in all of the countries of Ahasuerus's kingdom. In verse 21, to establish upon themselves that they should now celebrate the 14th and the 15th of Adar every year, in verse 22, to commemorate the days where the Jews rested from their enemies. But what's interesting is, how do you celebrate it? La'asot otam, to make them. Yemei mishteh v'simcha, days of drinking and rejoicing. U'mishloach manot, sending portions. Ish l're'ehu, a man to his friend. U'matanot la'evyonim, and gifts to the poor. Which means, the next phase is where this is no longer a grassroots operation, but where this is now taking on some sort of official authorization. Mordechai, in his capacity as the second to the king, is sending out a royal edict that the Jews should now celebrate Purim. And Mordechai now institutionalizes the celebration of the 14th and the 15th day of Adar. And how do you celebrate it? So Mordechai basically maintains what was celebrated earlier, the way of celebrating, with two significant changes. The first, Mordechai takes out the element of Yom Tov. It is not to be celebrated as a holy day. There is no prohibition of work. And in fact, in the Talmud, we're told of communities that have the minhag, the custom of not doing work, but not that this is something which is mandatory. So that Mordechai removed the element of work prohibition. Perhaps I would say the element that accentuates the I-thou, divine human being relationship. And instead, he inserted another social element, and that is the matanot le'evyonim, the gifts to the poor. So that it's not only giving portions of food to my friend, but there's also the element of social responsibility, of providing for those who are in need, who do not have. Mordechai, in institutionalizing this, in verse 21, says that this is something to be celebrated year in, year out. And this point perhaps becomes highlighted further in verse 27 and then 28, where we're told how the Jews accept upon themselves that they should now celebrate these 2 days every year. But then in verse 28, there's another element which is added. And it says, V'hayamim ha'elen nizkarim v'na'asim, that these days should now be remembered and they should be done. Which means, up to this point, we have been speaking about doing, celebrating these days. All of a sudden now, we speak about the days being remembered, and that somehow the memory has to precede the doing. And in verse 28, it then says, V'imea Purim ha'elen, these days of Purim, lo ya'avru, shall not pass, mitoch ha'yudim, from the midst of the Jews, v'zichram, and the memory, lo yasuf mizaram, will not end from their seed, which is a way of saying that the days of Purim will be celebrated forever. And then we come to the last phase, where Queen Esther becomes involved. In verse 29 it says, and Vatichtov Esther Hamalka, that Esther the queen writes down the force of these days to authorize, right, this letter of Purim a second time. And she also sends out books to all the Jews, scrolls, decrees, words of peace. And the last thing which we have is verse 32. Umamar Esther Kiyam Divrei HaPurim Ha'ele, and the word of Esther, Esther's ordinance, validating this observance of Purim, V'nichtav Basefer, was recorded in a book. In Masechet Megillah, the rabbis explain why the book is called the Book of Esther. And the reason that's given is not because Esther is the heroine of the story, but because Esther was the one who was instrumental in having the story written down. She was the one who insisted that there should be a book. And in another place in the Talmud, the rabbis say that when it says that the days of Purim should be remembered, what does it mean that the days are remembered? How do you remember? Not just mentally, but verbally. You have to talk about these days. And on what basis do you discuss these days? From a book. And therefore the rabbis learn from the verses that we have, that I just cited, that in fact the final stage of the celebration of Purim was the idea of reading a book, reading the Megillah. And I would like to look at what does that mean to us? How was Purim changed to give it a Jewish spin? The first thing, which I think is very, very important. In the beginning, we said how the Jews were drinking. These are days of mishtef, partying, and rejoicing. And very often, especially in our modern culture, people want to be happy, so you drink. You have a party. Drinking is what's characteristic of it. Think of New Year's celebrations, where people are constantly drinking. And the question is this really an expression of rejoicing? I said earlier that when the Jews were looking for a way to give Purim a Jewish spin, initially they wanted it to be a Yom Tov, a festival like the other festivals. In the end, Mordechai cut out the festival element, which the rabbis associate with work prohibition. But I want to read you something from the book of Dvarim, chapter 16, verse 10. It says, Va'asita chag shavuot l'Hashem Elokecha, and you shall make a Shavuot festival to Hashem your Lord, according to the gift which God has blessed you with. And then in verse 11 it says, V'samachta lefnei Hashem Elokecha, and you should rejoice before Hashem. And who is to rejoice? Ata uvincha uvitecha, you and your son and your daughter, v'avdecha v'amatecha, and your servant and your maid, v'halevi, and the Levite asher b'sharecha, who's in your gates, v'hager, and the stranger, v'hayatom, and the orphan, v'ha'amana, and the widow that's in your midst. And subsequently, in verse 13 and 14, we hear the same thing by Sukkot. Chag Sukkot taselecha, make a festival of Sukkot. And in verse 14, v'samachta b'chagecha, rejoice. Who? You and your son. And what's emphasized? And the Levi, and the Ger, and the Yatom, the orphan, v'ha'almana, and the widow. Which therefore means rejoicing is not just self-gratification. Rejoicing has to do with sharing. Rejoicing has to do with building a community. When the Rambam, Maimonides, speaks about the laws of Yom Tov, the festivals, this is from the Mishneh Torah, the laws of festivals, chapter 6, halakha 20. Maimonides writes, when one eats and drinks and rejoices during the festival, he should not be drawn after the wine and levity and say that whoever increases this practice is thereby increasing the mitzvah of rejoicing. For excessive drinking and levity is not an expression of rejoicing, but of revelry and foolishness. We are not commanded to be debauched and foolish, but to be joyous in a manner that is service to the Creator. And in the same section, in Halakha 18, when he talks about how do you rejoice, he says, one who shuts the doors of his courtyard and together with the members of his household eats and drinks, but does not feed the poor, this is not called a mitzvah act of rejoicing, but rather the rejoicing of his stomach. And then he goes on to quote various verses from the prophets, where God speaks to the Jewish people and says to them that I will throw dung on your faces, the dung of your festivals. Maimonides is very clear. And you can actually see this, in fact, in various verses in the Torah. What I just cited, also in Dvarim, chapter 27, that rejoicing has to do with a sense of building community, a sense of social responsibility. Therefore, when the Jews practiced sending portions of food to their friends, but even more so, when Mordechai instituted the idea of giving gifts to the poor, Mordechai wanted to give a message to the Jewish people that rejoicing has to be interwoven, or maybe I should say that at the core of rejoicing is the idea of coming together, bonding as a community, empowering ourselves as a community, being able to go out of our way to lift up those who do not have. This, by the way, is a major theme of Purim. When Haman comes to Ahasuerus in chapter 3, and propositions him to destroy the Jews, the way he describes the Jews is that they're a people who are divided and divisive. Am mefuzar umeforad. And when in chapter 4, Esther tells Mordechai, I'm willing to go and see the king, but if it's going to happen, you have to have the Jewish people backing me up. And she says to Mordechai, Lech knoset kol hayudim, go and gather all of the Jews. The strength of the Jews is when they're gathered together, where they come together as a people. And this is a major lesson, a major theme of Purim. Divided, we will be torn apart by our enemies. But when we gather together, that's what empowers us. And the lesson, if we want to celebrate Purim, is that we have to learn how to come together as a people, and especially how to take care of the poor who don't have. But there's another element which makes the story so important. And that is, or the celebration so important. It's not enough to just do. We have to remember and do. And the rabbis understood this to mean, before we do, we have to read the story. Read the Megillah. In the words of the Gemara, we have to publicize the miracle. The reading of the Megillah is an expression of study. It's an expression of memory, as we say, the day shall be remembered. And this is also at the core of who we are as Jews. Community building is critical. Bonding is critical. But it's also important for us to realize that we are not an isolated community, but that our communities are part of a totality of Jewish history. We are the people of the book. We are the people who have a past, and it's that sense of a past which gives us a sense of the future. The rabbis emphasize that the events of Purim were not a one-time historical phenomenon, but in fact they're part of the ongoing battle against Amalek, which began with Joshua, which continues in the time of King Saul, which continues with Mordechai and Haman. And by the way, Haman is an Agagi. Agagi, Agag was the king of Amalek in the time of Saul. And it continues on to this very day. It's important for us as Jews to remember our history. Not to remember it with nostalgia. Not to remember it as an academic exercise. But to remember it because it is a call to action. Because, as I said a moment ago, our recalling the past is what gives us a sense of the future. But to get to the future, we have to also act in the present. Today, we are still a divided, and I would even say divisive, community. We look at all the different denominations. We look in Israel, for example, at secular, religious, Ashkenazi, Sfaradi. We label people. And it's these divisions that weaken us, that tear us apart. We have to learn from the story of Purim what it means to become a united people. To be beyond the denominational levels. To be able to see that Israel and the diaspora are one. And perhaps I would say for people in the diaspora, when they speak about Israel, to not talk about you people over there as if they're the other, but to speak about Israel as mine, as my family, my extended family. For people who live in Israel, to not just be focused on their particular communities, but to be able to have the people in Tel Aviv identify with the people on the periphery. It is only when we are united that we are strong and that we're able to then face our enemies who are just waiting for that weak spot to be able to destroy us. In the section that speaks about Amalek in chapter 25 in Dvarim, it says, Vayizanev becha, kol ha-necheshalim acharecha, that Amalek is latching onto your tail, onto the stragglers. Amalek is looking for that weak point. And for us, perhaps the weak point is our disunity. One way of uniting is through food, is through charity. But another way of uniting is through the book, through study. Jews have to be able to find a common language in what they do. And that common language is in their book. Our book is the book which the world takes very, very seriously. But we perhaps should take it as seriously. It's not a book that's just put on the shelf, that's meant to be a museum piece. It's a book that's meant to be read. It's a book that's meant to publicize the miracles. It's a book that's meant to show us not just what was, but what needs to be. Let us use this Purim as an opportunity to come together as a people, to make resolutions, to start looking at that book, to start engaging that book, to start seeing that book as being a book of memory, but of memory that leads to action. And hopefully, these days of Purim will be days of joy that will never leave the Jewish people forever and ever. Happy Purim.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Please tell your friends about this podcast series, and please let us know your thoughts and comments. Send us email via podcast@pardesusa.org. Thanks to Dr. David Bernstein, who is the executive producer of the Pardes from Jerusalem podcast series. Shalom and goodbye from Jerusalem.